This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on June 18th, 2015. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
All right, the next item is item number three, notice of availability and petition for rulemaking on independent spending by corporations, labor organizations, foreign nationals, and certain political committees, which was filed by myself and Commissioner Weintraub. We have with us Adav Noti from the Office of General Counsel to discuss the matter. Thank you, Mr. Noti.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. Before you is agenda document 1531A, which is a draft notice of availability in response to a petition for rulemaking submitted by two members of the Commission, the Chair and Commissioner Weintraub. Petition asks the Commission to issue new rules and to revise its existing rules in four areas. One, the disclosure of financing information regarding independent expenditures and electioneering communications. Two, election-related spending by foreign nationals. Three, solicitations of corporate and labor organization employees and members, and four, the independence of expenditures made by IAOPCs and IE-only accounts. The draft notice would establish a 60-day period for public comments. If the Commission approves the notice, we would request authority to make any necessary technical and conforming changes for publication in the Federal Register. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Noti. So to clarify, the what we have before us today is approval of the notice. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments for Mr. Noti by the Commissioners? No? Hearing none, then, I do have a comment about the petition. It is sort of well known that we're at a critical time for campaign finance in this country. And so, I believe that FEC's obligation in our democratic process is more significant now than it ever has been. We know that a vast majority of citizens of every political viewpoint have deep concerns about the state of campaign finance and its impact on our democracy. And sadly, even more sadly, there is a documented loss of public confidence in our institutions of government. This agency, which is primarily responsible for implementing and enforcing campaign finance laws, must be at least a participant in, or ideally a leader, in restoring public trust in political institutions. In Citizens United, the Supreme Court recognized that democracy is premised on responsiveness, and that people should have the ability to influence our government. The work of the FEC must be informed by the views of the public. We violate public trust if we make insular decisions or those that are only on behalf of certain insiders. The petition before us today, and the notice in particular, is solely to allow people to comment directly to the Commission about issues that are of great importance to everyone in this country. It's a very small step that we're taking today, but it's a mandatory one under the law to make our agency more accountable and more responsive to the people that we serve. So I would urge you all not to go beyond what all the commissioners have done in the past, which is to, in a routine way, agree on sending these notices to the Federal Register. Thank you. Any other comment? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Chair Ravel. I, of course, agree with everything that you just said. It's There's been some comment about how this is sort of an unusual thing for commissioners to do, but it's not actually unusual at all for commissioners to try and put policy items on the agenda of the commission and to advocate for those positions. I mean, the agenda today is filled with proposals from one commissioner or another. There's the next item on the agenda is something that I put on, and there's a couple from Commissioner Goodman, and there's one from Commissioner Walther. So it's actually not, that's the only way policy changes around here, is when commissioners take it upon themselves to try and move an issue forward. And this is, in some ways, an unusual technique for doing so, but in other ways, it's very much in keeping with the long tradition of how things get done around here. I also believe that we have a very important obligation to the public. I am a public servant. That means I serve the public. The American people are my only client. Earlier this year, when we put out the advance notice of proposed rulemaking in the McCutcheon, with respect to the McCutcheon decision, got tens of thousands of comments, and three-quarters of them said we should do something about disclosure. We should enhance our disclosure rules. And at the last meeting, I made a motion that we open a rulemaking to do that, and it did not pass. And I got the sense at that meeting that some of my colleagues didn't really trust the comments that we got. But a week later, they thought somehow it was just kind of ginned up by particular groups that have particular points of views. A week later, there was a poll conducted by the New York Times and CBS News. And they found, strikingly, the exact same statistic. Three-quarters of the people they talked to said, yes, we want to see better disclosure by these outside spending groups. So I don't think that the comments that we got were an anomaly. And that was just on one issue. We have, the chair and I have, in our petition, raised four issues. Three of them have not gone out for public comment previously. They are issues that we believe can be addressed consistent with current statute and current Supreme Court doctrine. We recognize we can't change the law. Believe me, if I could rewrite the entire campaign finance system, as 85% of the public in response to that poll said they wanted to see the entire campaign system fundamentally changed or completely rewritten. If I could start from scratch, I would have a much broader agenda. But this is what I think we can do and what I think we should do to fulfill our obligations to the public. We've had super PACs since 2010, and when they first came on the scene, I know some commentators said, well, maybe you ought to wait a while and see how this is going to shake out before you try and do any rulemaking. But we've had 5 years of experience now, and I think we can see that they are playing a major role in politics, and that's fine. That's their constitutional right. But it's kind of odd that 5 years out we have nothing on the books that even acknowledges their existence. And I think that a lot of people out there are scratching their heads about what's going on out there in the world with these groups that, by definition, have to be independent of candidates and party committees, and whether that's what's really going on. When corporations were empowered in the Citizens United decision, I think it raised issues as to who's going to speak for corporations, who's going to be perhaps mandated to speak as part of corporate speech, because corporations don't actually have mouths of their own, and who makes the decisions as to what speech is going to come from corporations, given that all corporations are owned by somebody. Some corporations are owned by foreigners, and our rules don't really address this in the post-Citizens United world. So I think that there are a lot of issues that we can tackle and that people would like to see us tackle. I really believe that the American people would like to see some action on this. And I certainly, and maybe I'll be wrong, you know, maybe comments will come in and they'll say, forget about it. You know all those other polls and all those other comments. Don't listen to them. Listen to us. You shouldn't do anything at all. It's all perfect, exactly the way it is. I don't think we're going to get a lot of comments that say it's all perfect, exactly the way it is, but we could. But that's really all that putting the notice in the Federal Register will do, is it will provide for further debate. And debate is good. Debate is healthy. And debate shouldn't take place just among six people sitting up here. It should take place with everyone in the country, because it's their democracy. It's not ours. So I am enthusiastic about this effort. I know some people have concerns about our going down this path, but the nice thing about this notice of availability is that it doesn't require anybody to agree with us on any of the issues in order to just follow the rules that say that when somebody submits a petition, we put it in the Federal Register and we publish it and we put it out for comment. So believe me, I will not misconstrue anybody's vote to put the notice of availability in the Federal Register for any sign of agreement with any of the propositions that are in the attached petition. Nobody's going to be confused about that. But I do think that under our regulations, it's a pretty pro forma step to just publish the notice, and I hope that we will be able to do that.
Are there other comments? Mr. Vice Chair, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is not necessarily about the substance or anything regarding the petition, but rather about the procedure itself. As my colleague pointed out, this is an unusual situation where a commissioner acting in his or her own capacity as a commissioner invokes the petition process in Part 200 of our rules. And just to quote our rule, in Part 200.2A says any interested person may file with the commission a written petition for the issuance, amendment, or repeal of a rule implementing any of the following statutes, and includes the Federal Election Campaign Act. The question I have, though, is under our definitions in the Act in Part in 100.10, our definition of person excludes, or it says does not include, the federal government or any authority of the federal government. That would seem to indicate that a commissioner acting in his or her official capacity does not qualify as a person under FEC rules, and that in turn would appear to undercut the notion that a commissioner is acting in his or her official capacity may petition their own agency for a rulemaking. As my colleague pointed out, that in some ways there's nothing unusual about a commissioner bringing a document and putting it on the agenda, and that's absolutely true. Our longstanding directives give commissioners ample tools to bring matters before the commission for consideration and for up or down votes. Any one of us can, at any meeting, bring an agenda document, make it part of the make it part of the agenda, have it go blue. It's kind of the parlance that that we use here. And as she also pointed out at our last meeting, she exercised that prerogative under our directives to bring forward the resolution that that we voted on to open a rulemaking that had a substantial overlap with the petition that we have at issue right here. So as I mentioned, commissioners have ample tools at their disposal to bring matters before the commission. But it strikes me that the petition procedure that's set forth in Part 200 of our rules is really designed for the public, because they, private citizens, private organizations, they don't have the same tools that we as commissioners have to put a matter on the agenda, and as a result, I think that probably is. Why? I don't know what would be the exclusive reason, but probably one of the reasons why the federal government or any authority under the federal government is excluded from the definition of person. So so just as a threshold matter, I have a question and strong concerns about whether or not commissioners may avail themselves of the petition process that's set forward in Part 200.
The question about the definition of person is not one that had occurred to us, and it's not one that we've thought about, frankly. But generally speaking, the definitions in Part 100 of the Commission's regulations only apply to the regulations in that part of Title 11, which is Sections 100 through 116. They don't generally apply to Parts 200, 300, et cetera.
They don't apply, or they don't apply unless there's a conflict with a definition. I know, for example, in Part 300, there's a definitional standard, and the definitions from Part 100 apply unless otherwise trumped by the definitions. And there's also definitions in the ex parte section of the Part 200 of the rules. But I don't see anything that would say that. I mean, there are other. The term commission is not defined in Part 200 either. And is that definition up for grabs, since it's not otherwise defined in Part 200? It would seem to me that Part 100 definitions apply throughout 11 CFR unless otherwise noted in those subsequent parts.
Right, well, there are some regulations where there are clearly different definitions used. The ones that precede Part 100 are another example, the FOIA rules and things like that. Then there are other regulations, as you point out, that use terms that are defined in Part 100 without separately defining them, and it's generally assumed that they're used in the same way. I was just making the very technical point that the definitions in Part 100 are for the subchapter, that subchapter, which is...
Are they defined as such, saying that these only apply to the subchapter?
Well, Part 100.1 indicates that it's the subchapter that's...
Well, it says that it's issued to implement FICA, which seems pretty unremarkable, but it doesn't seem that it says that these only apply to, that these aren't generally applicable throughout the code.
Right, and like I said, there are other regulations outside Part 100 that appear to be using the same definitions in the same way. I don't know. I can't opine right now on whether person is such a term.
Okay.
Can I ask for some clarification? Because I understand that there was a petition filed by Representative Van Hollen, who clearly is also probably even more so a member of the government, and that was never an issue as far as I understand it, either at this commission or as we went forward. So can you give me some sort of background on that? Was this issue ever...
There was a petition for rulemaking filed by Representative Van Hollen about probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm not aware of this issue being raised at the time.
But there was never anybody who either raised it or looked at that issue to indicate that it was inappropriate for him to be able to file a petition, I presume. I wasn't here, so I'm just curious if you know about the history of that.
I don't believe so, no, not to our knowledge.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was here, and we did indeed publish Congressman Van Hollen's petition in the Federal Register.
And the other members of this commission were here as well, except for...
You know, I don't
how
recall
many years
it being
ago,
at
was
all
it?
Controversial at the time. But, I mean, first of all, let me say, I cannot believe that you are actually going to take the position that I am not a person. I find that a corporation is a person, but I'm not a person.
We're in the realm of 11 CFR, and I will stipulate that we're not in the realm of common sense when we're dealing with this book.
I won't.
But...
I'm sorry, Commissioner Hunter, you actually want to insist that I'm not a person?
That's right.
That's how bad it's gotten. My colleagues will not admit that I'm a person. That's really striking. Well, even accepting your assumptions for the moment, which for the purpose of argument, this regulation speaks to the federal government or any authority of the federal government. Sadly, I have no authority. I can't do anything unless I get three other commissioners to vote with me. So I don't believe that I am under that provision. And the notion that I am not, that because I'm a member of this commission, I am not a person, is just kind of dumbfounding.
Commissioner Hunter.
Going back in time to the Van Hollen petition, we did discuss whether or not it was appropriate for him to file that. And my recollection, and I could go back and see if I could find some old documents on that, but my recollection is that the conclusion, we came to the conclusion that he was filing it in his individual capacity, which seemed kind of odd and raised a number of other issues with regard to who was paying for his representation and all of this kind of stuff. I don't recall the specifics, but my recollection is that people said he was filing it in his individual capacity. And whether or not you're a member of the government, you know, you're presidentially appointed member of a federal commission. So I think you certainly are part of the federal government.
It doesn't say part of the federal government. It says the federal government.
And I think,
and
you know, just taking a step back, I agree with everything that the vice chair said. But there actually is a lot of common sense to reading this to mean that commissioners aren't persons, and that's what I meant. I didn't mean literally you're not a person. Of course,
my
you're a
person. My children are going to be really disappointed.
No, I think you're not an alien, at least not today. But the reason why it is common sense to say that none of the six of us are persons under this provision of the regulations and the act is because the APA is what started this provision in motion, the Administrative Procedures Act, which says that each agency shall give an interested person the right to petition for the issuance, amendment, or repeal of a rule. Then we adopted this regulation that we're talking about now, the one that Commissioner Peterson discussed. And in the explanation and justification accompanying that rule when it was passed, in 1992, the FEC adopted regulations that authorized the submission of petitions for rulemaking. These regulations were designed to, quote, provide the public with easy access to the procedures for filing rulemaking petitions with the commission. So it's very clear, both in the APA and in the ENJ that we adopted with the provision that Commissioner Peterson is talking about, that this is meant for public, for members of the public to petition the federal government. And for the purposes of this, we're members of the commission. We're not members of the public while we're sitting here. We're listening to members of the public. And furthermore, this guidebook that I rely on a lot, written by Professor Jeffrey Lovers of American University, A Guide to Federal Agency Rulemaking, specifically says on page 198 in the section entitled External Considerations, subsection 2, Public Petitions for Rulemaking. The public, too, may provide the impetus for rulemaking. And then it walks through some of the things that I just talked about. In addition to that, I think Commissioner Goodman may want to highlight some other research that makes it clear, you know, in all different parts of the federal government that when this statute was implemented in various regulatory bodies throughout the federal government, including the FEC, it was meant for members of the public. My understanding is that the chair of the commission and the longest serving member of the commission have filed this petition in their capacity as commissioners. And so you can avail yourself as the vice chair and as Commissioner Weintraub mentioned, of many other ways to put a document on the agenda. Nobody's arguing with that. What we're arguing with is that this is not the proper method or procedure for members of the commission. It's meant for the public. The public should be able to petition us. And if a member of the public submitted this very same petition, I would vote to publish it.
Did you? Do you have something to add?
Well, several things. I mean, A, you know, it's ironic. There's a lot of irony on the agenda today. It's ironic that what we're trying to do here is provide a mechanism to have a discussion with members of the public, to put something out for public comment, to hear from the public. And what you're saying is, in the interest of protecting the interests of the public, you're going to stop them from having that opportunity to comment to us, unless perhaps somebody in the audience or out there wants to copy our petition and file it on their own behalf tomorrow, in which case you will vote for it. Who knows? Maybe that might happen. I suppose the next question would be that, you know, like Congressman Van Hollen, would you permit us to file it in our individual capacities if you are willing to concede that we are, in fact, people when we leave the building?
Commissioner Hunter?
I don't know. I'd be happy to look at that and consider it. I haven't thought through different issues with respect to whether there'd be a need for recusal or things like that. I just haven't had a chance to think about if you were filing it in your personal capacity. Be happy to look into it and talk to you about it. But at this point, my understanding is that you're filing it as members of the commission. But if just a little tip, if any member of the public so desires to copy it and file it as a petition, as I said, I would vote for it as long as it's proper, and it does appear to be proper other than that. I might just point them to a couple of substantive issues. One of them is on the first page of the document, Agenda Document 15-31-B, and this is the one that was submitted by Ann Ravel and Ellen Weintraub. The second full paragraph, second to the last line on that page, subsequent related, and we're talking about Citizens United here and what the court did, then it says subsequent related court decisions combined with inaction on the part of the FEC has led to a proliferation of super PACs and other outside spending groups, blah, blah, blah. You might want to change that or add some citations to it, because it's not because of inaction on the part of the FEC. The FEC actually adopted two advisory opinions. The first one was AO 2010-11, Common Sense 10, which by all accounts created super PACs. So there wasn't any, you know, sitting around on the part of the FEC on that. We specifically said the creation of super PACs was permissible under Supreme Court doctrine. In addition, on page 2, the second full paragraph, the second sentence, contrary to the court's directive, however, millions of dollars in anonymous spending has surged into federal elections. And then there's some, you know, press stuff about dark money. You might want to amend that or read the case before you copy this and send it in, because the Supreme Court, of course, the Citizens United case, had nothing to do with dark money. It only upheld the requirement for disclosures for independent expenditures and electionary communications, nothing to do with dark money or political committees or any of that. So you might want to amend it before you send it in.
Did you have a...
Yeah, I'm
Commissioner Weintraub.
I'm sure that members of the public are happy to have your editing advice. Although I suspect that anybody who might want to submit this will submit what they want to submit, not what you want to hear.
Of course, they may.
I am happy to present this in either my individual or my official capacity. I don't think it really matters. I think I'm a person either way. And I also will note that I did, in fact, reach out to my colleagues yesterday and...
Yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yesterday.
Okay.
Well, having heard nothing from you up until yesterday, and because I believe that it was a non-discretionary and shouldn't be a controversial decision, I asked the vice chairman yesterday. I said, "Are you guys going to have a problem with this? Could I just finish my sentence?"
I didn't say anything. I was just going like this. If that bothers you, I'll put my hand down.
I'll call on you next.
Okay, thank you,
Commissioner.
I asked the vice chairman if you guys were going to have a problem with this, and I got sort of a, well, I don't know, and we're still talking about it, and I'm having a hard time believing that all of this was concocted and that you guys weren't thinking this through before close of business yesterday. So, you know, if... I actually did reach out to try and find out if you guys were going to have a problem, and I wish that you would have just said that so that, you know, we would have known what we were walking into today. But, you know, either way, as I said, I'm happy to present it in my individual capacity. When Congressman Van Hollen presented his petition, he did identify himself as Representative Chris Van Hollen, so, you know.
Correct. That's what it is on all of the petitions.
That's what's on the petition.
And
I have
litigation.
A title. It's not a secret that I'm a member of the Federal Election Commission. I'm just, I really do find it comical that you're going to, you are so opposed to giving the public this opportunity to weigh in on these issues that you're willing to take the legal position that we're not persons.
Commissioner Hunter.
I find it comical that we got an email from someone from one of the staff lawyers who works with I believe with the chair, I'm not sure. And he sent around, he says, attached is a rulemaking petition on behalf of Chair Ravel and Commissioner Weintraub. We ask that OGC draft a notice of availability in time to be included on the next open meeting agenda. Thank you. And that's sent around on June 8th at exactly 11 a.m. Then one of the Republican commissioners got an email from the USA Today, from Frederica Schouten. I'm not sure if I'm saying
Schouten, I believe.
Schouten, thank you. On the very same day, June 8th, at 11:15 a.m., wanted to get thoughts on this petition from Ravel and Weintraub, and she includes a link to a story that she's already written on the petition. So the first notice that we'd had no idea that this petition was being drafted. We found out first from the email that I said on June 8th at 11 a.m., and the story was already written by 11:15 a.m. So much for, you know, giving people a heads up and worrying about giving them timing to talk about things.
Well, there is time. We're discussing it now several weeks later. Right?
Yeah, and you just,
I mean, as we do with the things that other things that get placed on the agenda, not in advance, but that same day.
Yeah, it would have been nice to know, you know, what was coming and find out about it directly from our colleagues than from the USA Today 15 minutes or a few minutes after the petition was sent around. In addition, the chair said, and there's so many articles, but I think it was in the CNN one. The chair said, people will say you are the chair of the commission. You should work from within. I tried. With all due respect, I wasn't a part of any of those conversations. Maybe my colleagues were, although I doubt it. And as you know, I'm the Republican member of the Regs Committee, and we have not talked about any of these issues, I believe, since you joined the commission, but certainly in this calendar year. And the only person who's ever talked to me about these issues with any seriousness is Commissioner Walther. I mean, he's come to me several times and talked with a lot of specificity, which is more ripe for public comment, in my opinion, than just platitudes, with a lot of specificity on these issues. And so we've had constructive conversations, but I haven't had one conversation with either Commissioner Weintraub or the chair, and again, I don't believe my colleagues have either, on any of these issues.
I have to respond to that,
okay.
Because I do differ with your recollection,
okay,
of this. As you recall, last year, I reached out to those of you on the other side of the aisle and agreed to provide the fourth vote and have,
yes,
a discussion of that was an extensive discussion and conversation concerning the issues that were raised by both Citizens United and the McCutcheon decision. And ultimately, I did provide that fourth vote after what was, I thought, very good and straightforward negotiations with respect to the purely conforming regulatory matters. And at the time, I spoke to you about the fact that there was a concern about the failure to have other matters that were discussed in Citizens United relating to disclosure, coordination, and other matters that were not part of our discussions. Mm-hmm. And you said to me quite clearly, mm-hmm, that that was off the table, that you would not consider those matters at all. Mm-hmm. So that, I believe, was sufficient information for me to understand from you and others, and you're the other part of the Regs Committee, as am I. And it was very clear to me that we were never going to go forward, and that is the reason that this matter had been held up for 5 years, and why I committed and agreed to do the other regulations, as I have gone over the aisle on numerous occasions last year in providing the fourth vote for many matters. So this is something that I have worked on very hard to try to achieve some resolutions with you, but it was clear to me on matters that concern me, that I think are important to the American public, relating to the issues that are going to be presented in our upcoming campaigns, that we should be thinking about those matters, about disclosure of who's behind campaign contributions, all disclosure, that you and your fellow commissioners on that side of the aisle will not ever provide the required fourth vote for either regulations or other matters. So that is why we are here today. That is why we are taking this unusual step. I would never have considered doing something like this unless I was absolutely abundantly clear that there was never going to be any movement on your side to help in trying to move our regulations and do the job that we're entrusted to do by the people of this country and by Congress to do disclosure.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So if you're so convinced of that, then why are we doing this?
Because
it's just an exercise in futility.
It is not an exercise.
If you're convinced that nobody's going to do anything.
I disagree.
Okay.
It is not an exercise in futility. What is an exercise in futility is if we are so insular that we do not allow the American public, citizens of this country who have a very vital interest in how our electoral processes are conducted, to weigh in, to talk about these issues that are so important to them, that the CBS New York Times poll that Commissioner Weintraub referenced, across the board, Republicans, independents, and Democrats are concerned about our campaign finance system. And we, as the agency entrusted with this job, we should be listening and we should be allowing them to speak. And that's what I think is key. I know that it's going to be difficult for any of you to vote yes on any of these matters, but I do not believe that it is at all futile to have the American public be a party to the work that we do. I think it is absolutely our requirement. I said it at the beginning of the year when I was chair that what I wanted to do was open up this commission to allow the American public to come in and voice their views about the issues that we do that are so critical.
Thank you. Going back to our conversations, which I believe were approximately 9 months ago, I could be off by a little bit, but something along the lines of nine-ish months ago, you're right. I did say let's not include anything else in the rulemaking that we were discussing at that time. I don't recall saying that we would never consider these issues, but I will say that now. I mean, I will say, yes, to the extent that we're asked to do things that in our view are either unconstitutional or outside the commission's authority or are pending before Congress, as we've said over and over and over, those are not things that we're interested in doing. And we've explained what our position is. And so to suggest that we're just sitting around with no reason to vote for this stuff is not true, and we did talk about it in the context of that agreement that you're right, you provided the fourth vote on last year, but I think we have not talked about it at all this year. You have never asked me about any of these issues this year, but you're right. I would tell you, which is the same thing that we have said before, I think it is a waste of time to ask the public to weigh in. It's a waste of their time, not mine. It's a waste of their time to sort of lead them down a path in thinking that we're going to be able to do some things about this when the premise of the document is really, as I pointed out earlier, I think inaccurate and misleading. And we, as many of the comments that we received last time, as I said, we did open it up for public comment. There were a lot of comments, many of which were virtually identical, blatantly unconstitutional, outside of our authority, or proposals that were pending before Congress.
Let me add one other factor, because we were talking about disclosure, and yes, we were discussing it in the context of Citizens United rulemaking, but it was very clear that this was something, as you are saying now, that you'd be unwilling to do in any context. And I have also, in addition, spoken to you about coordination in the context of us being members of the Regulations Committee and how we needed to augment our coordination rules. You spoke about coordination with respect to party coordination, and I said we need to look at this more broadly because this is an issue that was raised in Citizens United. This is an issue that we are concerned about, and you specifically said no.
What kinds of things would you want to do on coordination?
I am not, I think that we needed to discuss it, and you did not want to discuss it at all. You did not want it to be on the agenda of the Regulations Committee. You did not want to even discuss it. I am not going to sit here today and tell you exactly what I think the ultimate result is. I think it's a complicated question.
Okay.
No question. It's something that a functioning commission would be discussing, but we were not even able to get to the discussion of that.
Because my understanding from the last hearing, when we were talking about considering changing the coordination rules, which, as you know, has they're a product of numerous, and Commissioner Weintraub knows this because she was involved in many of the regulatory changes, numerous court battles where you had one side saying you're trampling on the First Amendment and First Amendment associational rights in particular, and on the other side people were saying you're not regulating enough. So the commission came up with a rule that, you know, was kind of the happy medium perhaps between those two concerns, and nobody sued us on this rule for the first time in a long time. It was a well thought out bargain all along the way, and my understanding of the kinds of things that some want to do is once again adopt through regulation a law that's pending before Congress right now, and it's, I believe, the Price Van Hollen Stop Super PAC Candidate Coordination Act, which is the model that we've been asked to follow.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I just want to, I agree with everything the Chair said, but I also want to add that I have to hear from Commissioner Hunter that I've never talked to her about any of these issues. Only Commissioner Walther has talked to you about these issues. That's really kind of astonishing to me, given that for years we were on the Regs Committee. We labored for months when Citizens United first came out to try and craft a document that would address on a broad scale all of the issues, that many of which we've raised again in this petition. And I recall well a date in October 2010 when you just said to me point blank, "We're not going to do this. That issue's off the table. That issue's off the table. That issue's off the table. We are not going to allow any NPRM to go out the door that invites public comment on these issues." And I think, honestly, what I'm hearing today is really so it's just untrue. It is an untrue statement that you and I have never talked about these issues. We've talked about them at great length. We haven't gotten very far, and indeed, that's why when Chair Ravel came on board, I said, "Why don't you take a turn at the Regs Committee, because I'm just not making any headway." But I also think that, you know, when I look at the polling out there about how people are so fed up with the system that they've got, and let me just mention, by the way, that some of the proposals that I've been trying to get through predate anything that was presented in Congress. I've been pitching these ideas for years now, internally. They just haven't gone anywhere. But when I read the polling data, when I look at polls that say that 85% of the people who responded to the poll thought we ought to either start from scratch or have fundamental revisions of the campaign finance law. What I see is that there are some people in Washington, and some of them sit at this table, who just don't care what the American people think and are really averse to hearing from the American people on these issues, and think they can get away with thumbing their nose at what the American people want. And I'll go back to where I started. I'm a public servant, and I think I really need to listen to the public. I think that's part of my job, to try to be responsive to public concerns. There was a column recently that Ruth Marcus wrote in the Washington Post, and I think her ending line was, "Unless the American people demand that Washington behave differently than the way it's behaving now, you know, things are just going to keep on the way they are now." And I think, you know, maybe maybe you're prepared to say it doesn't matter if the American people demand it. It doesn't matter to you what the American people think, or if we got a million comments saying that they want to see better disclosure from outside spending groups, or they are dumbfounded by the notion that some of these groups that claim to be independent are actually independent. Maybe none of that matters to you. Maybe it just doesn't. It matters to me.
Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to make two points. One, address kind of the larger policy issue we're talking about now, and go back to what I started with. I don't think, well, I'll speak for myself, I don't think that my job is to ignore the public or not to be interested in what the public has to say. We have procedures in place to actually that require the commission to listen to petitions that are submitted from members of the public, and when we have a rulemaking that's underway, to receive comments from the public, and we must consider those comments. And in fact, the failure to do so can cause whatever action that may result from a rulemaking to be subject to court challenge. So I there is undoubtedly a role for an FEC commissioner to be responsive to what public comment says. However, there's the role of an FEC commissioner, and then there's a role of a member of Congress or a member of the Senate. We have to act within the scope of authority that's been granted to us under the statute, and that's been interpreted by the courts. And notwithstanding what 99% of the public might say on an issue, if it's outside of the scope of authority that I have as a commissioner, I can't act. It is up to those who represent the hundreds of millions, with the many millions and millions of registered voters, to decide how the larger outline of federal campaign finance law is going to look. And we've had this debate many times about, and we have a disagreement, and I respect the position that my colleagues have, and I understand the commitments, and I respect those commitments. I know that they are heartfelt and deeply interwoven. But I have equally deep commitments and principles that I feel I have to be true to as well. And we have a disagreement about the scope of what a commissioner can do in our own capacity, notwithstanding what public opinion may say. And I can't act outside of what I believe my authority is, as it's been defined by the Federal Election Campaign Act and by the courts that have interpreted that on multiple occasions. So I just want to say that, again, I'm more than willing to listen to the public, and there is an absolutely important role that the public plays in our determinations here. But I can't allow that to disregard what it is, what I believe that the statute authorizes me to do in my capacity as a commissioner. But just going back to where I began, I've tried to avoid any discussion on the substance of this, because if this is proper, and I raised the question, and I was, we've had a lot on our table the last little while, and I was up until about 2:30 going through and looking through the regulatory language and just digging through some other information regarding APA rulemaking and so forth, just to see if I was missing something. Begrudge or deny my colleagues from bringing anything that they want to up for consideration before the commission, but it has to be in accordance with either the directives that we have or in accordance with the rules as I read them, at least. And so whether this was converted to a blue document and brought before the commission for a vote, That's a prerogative, as I've mentioned, that every commissioner has, and we dealt with a resolution last time. So to me, this is about the procedural integrity of the process, and what I can do as a commissioner, and what is my role with this sort of a petition. I don't want to really address the substance at this point, because I think that we're at a point before we even get into the substance, that we're at a threshold issue about whether or not this is permissible, but I do want to say that I don't My fellow commissioners, I know, have their commitments, and they have every right to bring their concerns, as I have, either to the table here, through the press, through speeches, through articles that they may write. That I think that there's absolutely every right that a commissioner has to make their views felt on these issues, and I don't seek to circumscribe that, but I do feel like there is a procedure in place, and I think that there is a threshold issue here where I'm having a difficult time getting over the hump to the conclusion that this is a process that's set forth. The petition process is one that a commissioner can avail themselves of in their role as a commissioner. So, again, I'm starting back to where I started, and so I won't be a broken record any longer.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Are there other comments? Yes. Commissioner Goodman.
Well, let me pick up where Vice Chair Peterson left off and invoke the phrase of the day, which is this is an unusual technique, because it was so unusual that, you know, it did send me down to the library, literally sitting in the library downstairs and pulling Pierce on admin law and Lubbers and all the others to try to figure out whether a commissioner is an interested person under this procedure. Now, a little background would be helpful here. Last year, six commissioners voted to publish an ANPRM to receive public comment into this agency. And that was an internal policymaking exercise that we engaged. And Chair Ravel, I think you'll admit I was the first Republican to offer my vote to you.
Absolutely.
To bring that public comment into the building. And that is the way that commissioners typically conduct their business and engage in the policy making debate enterprise. Eventually, we got six commissioners to vote for an ANPRM. It was published. We agreed to receive comments from the public. We held an all-day hearing, and we heard diverse points of view that were of various persuasions and various ideologies and perspectives on what we should do. And a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. The four corners of the ANPRM we issued got expanded, and we accepted comments on a number of diverse issues, not just the four corners of the issue of McCutcheon. We heard them all. We received the comments. I've read many of them. But the way we got there was through internal policymaking procedures, which I think is the usual technique. And it was bipartisan, and we have received those comments. Now, we have considered them, and then following up on that hearing, Commissioner Weintraub, one meeting ago, proposed a resolution to act on a host of issues raised that we had here that day. And that motion failed. Okay? It was defeated. So out of frustration now, I understand the frustration. I've been on the losing side of some votes here myself. You can't just circumvent the powers and limits on the powers of your commission office by invoking a procedure that is inapposite for the public. And so I have looked through, I've researched this issue. It is of interest to me that our Office of General Counsel says it didn't occur to them, because it occurred to me very quickly. Could I do that as a commissioner? This looks like a public, this is a procedure available to the public. And on the issue of Van Hollen, the congressman, whether he's an individual or congressman, fits the model that is discussed generally in the treatises, that whether you discuss this procedure as one available to the public, or the other phrase that's often used by one of the seminal law review articles in the field, is outsiders to the agency. The APA in 1946 was enacted to give people outside the agency the ability to influence the policymaking process inside. It was not intended to give the agency officials who have the inherent power to engage in precisely the procedures that we engaged in last year and earlier this year the powers to lobby their own agency. So let me just walk through why, first, Commissioner Hunter read our own explanation and justification from 1992 that accompanied this regulation. And it did say this was to provide the public the procedures they needed to bring petitions before the agency. And that follows from the APA statute that authorized this regulation in the first instance. The definitive work interpreting that APA provision, Section 553E, what is the 1947 Attorney General's Manual on the Administrative Procedure Act. It's been identified by the Supreme Court as the authoritative source on interpreting that provision. And the Attorney General's APA Manual from 1947 says the right to petition under Section 553E must be accorded to any interested person. It will be proper for an agency to limit this right to persons whose interests are or will be affected by the issuance, amendment, or appeal of the rule. And it goes on to discuss that in terms of members of the public who will be affected. When you look at the legislative history of the APA, and particularly the Senate Judiciary print of June 1945 that is often cited by the courts, it says, this document explains that the petition provision requires agencies to receive and consider requests of private parties for the making, modification, or rescission of rules. The D.C. Circuit has said the Administrative Procedure Act may be said to have four basic purposes, including to provide for public participation in the rulemaking process. Every time a court has mentioned this process, this statute, whether it's the Ninth Circuit, the District Court of the District of Columbia, the District of Oregon, or the D.C. Circuit, they have always discussed this petition process by reference to the public and citizens, not public officials, petitioning their own agency. I will read from the Ninth Circuit in Northwest Ecosystem Alliance v. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Section 553E of the APA gives interested citizens the right to petition for the issuance, amendment, or repeal of a rule. The District of the District Court in the District of Columbia in National Gay Rights Advocates v. HHS said, it is not disputed that Section 553E of the APA establishes a procedure for the filing of citizens' petitions. Also, the District Court for the District of Columbia, as recently as 2013, Friends of the Earth v. EPA, Section 553 is the citizen petition for rulemaking process. District of Oregon, 2004, in a case called Center for Biological Diversity v. Norton, quote, interested citizens may also petition the secretary to add or remove species from the endangered or threatened list. And the D.C. Circuit in 1979, in a case called NRDC versus Securities and Exchange Commission, public participation in agency decision-making is increasingly recognized as a desirable objective. Congress, to some extent, recognized the value of citizen input when it provided a right to petition for rulemaking in the APA. Now, there are analogous cases interpreting 16 U.S.C. Section 1533B3A, a statute that applies specifically to Fish and Wildlife Service in adding certain species on endangered species, and citizens' right to petition the Fish and Wildlife Service for the addition of species. And that statute is specifically enacted pursuant to Section 553.5 U.S.C. Every time the court has reviewed that citizen petition process, it has talked about third-party petitions, citizens' requests, and citizen petitions. So then I've looked at other legal resources, including the treatise that Commissioner Hunter mentioned by Jeffrey Lubbers. There is a 2014 final report to the Administrative Conference of the United States by Jason Schwartz and Richard Revez that builds on work in 1988 by the seminal author on this subject, William Lundberg, who was the recognized national expert on this petition process and wrote the seminal piece in the Wisconsin Law Review in 1988. Both of these documents are very clear that the petition process that's being invoked here by two public officials was intended for outsiders of the agency. That's the reference by Mr. Lundberg in his Law Review article. And in the final report dated 2014 that builds on and picks up on Mr. Lundberg's work in the 1980s, which is the final report to the Administrative Conference of the United States, on page 1 discusses the petition process as applicable to the general public, and on page 11 refers to them as public petitions. In fact, it has become so tautological in the treatises that this is a process that applies to citizens and publics that it often doesn't even bear repeating in some of the treatises. It is an assumed premise. If you look at Wright and Miller, 32 Federal Practice and Procedural, under Judicial Review, section 8172, it says that a citizen has the right to petition an agency for rulemaking, and then later it discusses the petition right as one applicable to private parties. 7 West Federal Admin Law Practice, section 7529, repeats that those phrases, citizens and private parties. We've then looked at other agencies as a guide to how other agencies understand the petition process under the APA. And we have looked at the lay explanations on their websites for their own petition processes. The APA requires agencies to offer a petition process. The FCC makes clear that it is a right of the public. The Health and Human Services, Department of Health and Human Services talks about regulated groups and other stakeholders and that the public may ask or petition. The Department of Transportation uses the phrase, it is available to the public. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission says any member of the public may petition. The Office of the Federal Register has this on its website. How does an agency decide to begin rulemaking? And then it goes on, petitions from interest groups, corporations, and members of the public. How does an agency involve the public in developing a proposed rule? If an agency receives a petition for rulemaking from a member of the public, it may decide to announce a petition in the Federal Register and accept public comments on the issue. And then there is the Administrative Conference of the United States that says the APA grants to the public the right to petition for rulemaking and requires agencies to provide a decision on the merits. In addition to that research, when you read in context the petition process we have in our regulations, I think it gives the fallacy to a member of an official of the agency invoking the process because, for example, in our own regulation, 11 CFR section 200.3D, it provides that the commission will not consider the merits of the petition before the expiration of the comment period on the notice of availability. I don't know how two officials here petition their own agency and give impassioned speeches as the chair and Commissioner Weintraub just have and yet maintain that you have not already reached the merits of your own petition.
Sounds like we're not the only ones.
Right. There is the issue of whether or not what would constitute the public record here, because 11 CFR section 200.6A provides that the agency record for the petition process consists of all correspondence between the commission and the petitioner, other commentators, and state or federal agencies pertaining to commission consideration of the petition. Will that include all of your internal communications between each other or to the staff? I'm not suggesting I'm ready to go look at all that. I'm saying that it gives the fallacy to the invocation of this procedure because it introduces great confusion on in what hat you are wearing when you discuss this with your own staff and the emails that go back and forth. So what would be included in this public record where two public officials have invoked the petition procedure? And finally, is the issue that, you know, Representative Van Hollen has standing to sue us as well. And I don't think that any of us wants to be in the position of saying that because we have the same standing that Representative Van Hollen may have, we're prepared to sue our agency as well when we lose votes. This procedure cannot be a sort of an alternative sore loser process where I have lost votes on the commission to move forward as recently as one meeting ago. And therefore, I am going to invoke a process that gives me standing to get to objectives I could not have gotten to as a commissioner. In other words, advance past the majority vote of the commission in order to put something out for public comment in the Federal Register that I've already lost in one vote, as well as obtain standing to sue when the agency does not vote my way on the substance of the petition. So then looking at whether or not one would want to invoke kind of a hybrid individual capacity, let me just say...
I'm sorry. I just found out that I'm not an alien, at least not today. So am I now a hybrid individual? Can you explain to me what that is?
Excuse me. I'm at hybrid standing, where I am invoking my standing as a citizen to bring it to the agency. Well, let's walk through all of the legal problems that flow from that. Okay, so I take my commissioner hat off. I send a petition to my own agency in order to invoke citizen standing under this petition process. I then put my commissioner hat back on, sit at the dice, and sit in judgment of my own private petition to the agency. I arguably then have the right to take my commissioner hat off because the standing I have asserted and the harm I have asserted or the interest I have asserted to be an interested person as a citizen in bringing the petition arguably gives me standing to sue when I'm aggrieved by a future vote of the commission not to move forward on my petition. So now I've asserted standing to take my commissioner hat off again and sue the agency to countermand a vote I lost on the commission. And then presumably put your commissioner hat back on and come and sit here in executive session and discuss the litigation and the merits and the proceedings regarding my own litigation against the agency. I think that gives the fallacy of going to individual standing and taking your commissioner hat off. So if you're stuck with commissioner standing to do so, I think that the procedure is inapposite.
Are you dead?
By analogy, I would just say that if
not
the commissioner
yet
has standing to bring this before the body and to invoke themselves as an interested person, then I also presumably would have standing to bring an advisory opinion request before the agency, take my commissioner hat off, file an advisory opinion request, put my commissioner hat back on, come sit at this body, and opine on my own advisory opinion request, and then take my commissioner hat back off, sue the agency if I don't get the result that I want, put my commissioner hat back on, and sue the agency because I feel aggrieved by the advisory opinion result. For these reasons, I believe we've tried to pound a square peg into a round hole, and I don't think that we're in proper procedural footing, and I do not believe this petition is properly and legally presented to the commission.
Thank you for your extensive elucidation of the law. Let me just say that obviously we have consulted legal advice prior to doing this, but nonetheless, first, no one here is talking about suing the agency. No one has ever suggested that, and that's not what we have before us. We have a notice. We have voting on a notice for a petition to put it on the Federal Register. Just because this is an unusual act by members of the commission and has not been, was not contemplated. Of course, it was not contemplated in what the APA provided. And thank you for all the law review articles, but, you know, anybody could have said that. We understand that the whole purpose that that was set up for was for public input into an agency, which, of course, this agency doesn't normally like. But the fact that there we have laws, many of them that relate to campaign finance, that do not specifically relate to things that are being done today because they have not actually, they were not contemplated. That was not the purpose of the law. We could say that with respect to super PACs, for example, or various other things that we deal with every day. And the whole purpose is to look at what the underlying interest is. And the underlying interest here is an ability to get public input. And I would just reiterate what Commissioner Weintraub said previously. It's interesting that suddenly process and the law is so significant when, you know, we often look at what seems to be clear law and can't seem to extend it to other circumstances. What we have before us is the interest in allowing the public, allowing citizens of this country to speak to the commission. That's what the purpose of the APA is. That's what we're doing. So for you, and I appreciate your desire to hang your hat on what you consider to be, you know, clear law and process and procedure. But in fact, if we think about what we're doing here today, it's this commission that is denying the ability of people of this country to speak to us about matters that are clearly within our purview and that are clearly things that are a concern to the public and that are clearly things that this commission should be considering. So I leave it at that. It's not surprising to me what has occurred, but nonetheless, just a moment, I'm still speaking. But nonetheless, I can see what the outcome is, but it appears that there's other members of the public who are concerned about this too and might remedy the problem here.
I just have two quick responses. You have suggested the right to sue the agency by asserting interested person status under this petition process. By doing so, you can become an aggrieved person under the APA. And so you have inherently, by taking this step and putting this hat on, you have asserted the same standing that it would take, or virtually identical standing, to then sue the agency. Second, and you've invoked Chris Van Hollen, and he's clearly sued the agency several times. And secondly, I would just say, I understand the broader policy interest that you're interested in achieving. As I said, there are procedures to do that. I have voted to bring those comments in. We have received them as recently as 4 months ago. But the ends that you mean to achieve do not justify the procedural means of invoking an inapposite procedure that was intended for the public and not for commissioners.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Should I make a motion?
Yes. I think, is there any further comment from commissioners? Commissioner Walther.
Everybody's got to chime in here. A lot of us, a lot of research has been done. People have stayed up. We've talked about it to ourselves. I've sent some notes back and forth to general counsel on the various issues that have arisen. It's been a concern to me on how we treat this matter as opposed to really what might ultimately result. I believe very strongly in the campaign finance law. I don't think anybody should doubt that. I've been on here second to the longest, probably too long. But throughout all that, it's been no question in my mind that the public finance law is a good one. I was not comfortable with a five-person decision in Citizens United, but that's the law. I was on chairman of the commission during the litigation. I was the only commissioner that went there to hear the ugly news orally by the court that morning, the front row center, and it's made a big impression on all of us and the nation. So we have to look as commissioners. When I took this job, left a great law practice of 37 years totally, and my firm was 33 to come here. The thought was to try and make a contribution, support the law, make a difference. I was warned, not to the degree I should have been, about what I could expect here. And it reminds me of a conversation I called with Senator, then Dick Bryan. He was a good friend of mine for years, and he'd retired, and he was working for a law firm in Las Vegas. I said, "Senator, I got asked to serve on the Federal Election Commission. What do you think?" And he said, there's a big silence. And he said, "Well, Steve," he said, "they won't put it on your epitaph." And notwithstanding, I showed up here, but I think it's important for us to do what we are here to do, and that's to take a look at what we do within the confines of our position as a commission. I've been totally frustrated with the inability to write editorials, to suggest, you know, to do things that take me away from the need to be objective to all sides that come before us. So I'm torn by this situation that we have right now. I believe in the positions that my two colleagues are advocating. I think we can do a better job with foreign investment. I think we could do, obviously, a better job in filling the holes that have existed since Citizens United. I think one of the first things we could do is repeal a regulation that we adopted here, and I supported it at the time, never thinking of the implications of how people would interpret it. And that's Reg 200. I should know it by heart. But if we wanted to fill a hole, yeah, 220 CA, we could start with that. But we're not doing that. We have, in the last year, learned a lot on our own initiative about how the public feels. And it's all consistent with the polls. They don't like the results of too much money in the political marketplace. So what we're going to get is a reaffirmation of what we already know, and we've heard it in spades. So then what do we do here when, and I respect my commissioners, views on the, I wouldn't call it the other side, but who depart from my view and the chairs and Commissioner Weintraub. Yes, Citizens United left a big hole in what we were ever anticipated. And the Disclose Act, if adopted, would have filled a lot of those holes and made rulemaking after the Disclose Act much easier. Their position is Congress won't even fill those holes on its own. Should we take the initiative ourselves to do what Congress feared to tread? Now, I feel strongly enough to think that perhaps we should do that and see where the courts take it. And so I would support a lot of what is being supported in this petition and have already. But I look at the position we're in here, and I've written on whether or not what would be our procedure if someone petitioned in their individual capacity versus their representative capacity or in their quasi-responsible capacity, in their, which we must always be cognizant of as a commissioner, and what the implications are. And so I'm troubled by whether or not we should trigger the resources of the agency to satisfy our frustration and to try to move in a direction say it's one commission, two, or three, outside the normal bounds of doing that. Because it brings into course into our own staff, the resources of the OGC already, and what would happen coming out of it. Now, if it's true, as implication, nothing will come out, so the resources of the agency will never be touched beyond putting it on the Federal Register. If that's so, I'm not too sure it's a very wise thing for us to use the petition-making process to accomplish that result. If it's not true, it means that the General Counsel's office will be called into play here. Then what we've got is two commissioners, and it could be one, it could be three, who are triggering the resources of the agency in this way, using the resources. And that means that any petitioner, anytime, any commissioner could file their own petition and start the ball rolling. And we didn't agree with that. And the next thing you know is a petition for rulemaking. And we're caught in a situation which I don't think most of us envisioned. And I think there are other ways that if we're not satisfied, we know what the public thinks now. We certainly could do a lot on our own. We could let the public know on our website to write me and let me know how you feel. They could do a lot of things like that. But we're not talking about that here. I'm concerned not a little bit, but about the petition itself. Because when you look at the petition, I agree with the objective entirely on what to try and accomplish. But it is a partisan one. It's not objective coming from the agency itself or with the work of both or representing both sides. And by the way, I think I've been critical. And I think a big failure on the part of the commissioners has been for them to refuse to listen to each other and to let the public listen to each of us. All of us are big advocates of free speech. That's the mantra. This is a big deal. But when it comes to having a rulemaking, we have been unable to allow the rules that we would propose to be made public. And until we're willing to tolerate each other's views, our rulemaking process is a farce. I think we have to actually listen. Everybody here has a right in a rulemaking to have their views heard. When that happens, I think you'll find that we can make some rules available to the public for consideration. In this particular case, it's to me a call for help. But I don't think it's a call for the kind of serious rulemaking that I think that we should be doing. I'm uncomfortable with some of the language in it because it looks more like a sales pitch than a direct objective approach toward obtaining a petition consideration. It makes the point, I think, excessively that somehow there's an obligation now coming out of Citizens United and there's some kind of a mandate as opposed to acceptance. Citizens United and the courts have talked about, yes, it's critical to our democracy. But they've never said there's a constitutional right for disclosure. I think there hopefully would some would be the right to know, the right of the public to know who is trying to govern them. But that's not happened. And I think it suggests here that somehow the will of the Supreme Court, as much as we disagree with Citizens United in this position, should be respected and followed. And it says, Citizens United is premised on adequate disclosure of these new sources of outside spending. I don't think that's necessarily so. They decided on one thing and tolerated another, but I don't think they were intrinsically linked. So that if there wasn't disclosure provisions, Citizens United would have been differently? I don't think so. But the suggestions here, it says the court ruled that unlimited corporate political spending must be accompanied by transparency as to the sources of such spending. I'm not comfortable with those assertions as being a basis to move forward because it suggests that somehow the will of the court is being frustrated if we just don't do it. And it's somehow. So this, I think, just from a technical point of view, I'm not that comfortable with. While I agree with some of the things that are being sought for disclosure, and hopefully You know, at some point we may have a regulation or two that would follow from a healthy debate from hearing all sides. The questions that we ask on some of these issues, and specifically the ones that we haven't supposedly heard about before, coercion, for example, coordination, there's nothing in this that suggests what kind of direction to take. Nothing. In other words, it's an amorphous question, and it's going to get nothing more than an amorphous answer. Can we ask the public to really divine where we think we might go with some of this stuff? I doubt it. And so if we're looking at the people who are really in the industry, who really know what this is all about, they don't need this. So I'm concerned about the process of triggering the resources in this way, and just looking technically at the petition itself, I'm concerned about its contents. So for those reasons, I have some, obviously, as you can tell, some serious reservations. But then I've been told, maybe correctly so, that we must vote for this. And I wrote to the General Counsel's office yesterday and got an email back saying, yes, it is a mandatory thing. And I asked, is this a discretionary thing or not? And let me tell you what the response was so that... Okay, he's got a copy.
Commissioner Walther,
yeah, there it is.
Do you think that rather than actually reading counsel's confidential advice to the commission, that you could sort of paraphrase
of course
what you believe?
I'd
that
be glad to. I'll leave it to the, general counsel.
To not waive the, yeah.
The question arises as to what authority, it's really basic in terms of that, because it says what authority we have on this issue. And if, in fact, it's a mandatory thing, I'd like to know if we have any discretion, if so, how much there is. The other issue, of course, has been raised on whether or not the status of the two petitioners affects the whether the petition is entitled legal cognizance. I guess it's a new issue for us and probably deserves more attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other comments before there's a motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very impressed by the amount of time and effort that my colleagues put into trying to come up with a reason to vote no on this. And as my colleague, Commissioner Walther, knows, we put together a very detailed notice of proposed rulemaking that addressed many of these issues, that had specific regulatory language and many alternatives, and I think we put that to a vote. I lost track 4 or 5 times. Could never get that out the door as something for the public to comment on. So I share your frustration in our not being able to move by those means. Having said that, in cognizance of our procedural rules that say that if a document qualifies as a petition under 11 CFR 2002, the commission will, upon the recommendation of the Office of General Counsel, will publish a notice of availability in the Federal Register stating that the petition is available for public inspection and allowing for comment, and our lawyers have opined that it does qualify as a petition under 11 CFR 2002. In consideration of all that, I move that we approve the notice of availability drafted by the Office of General Counsel and direct them to have it published in the Federal Register and, of course, authorize any necessary technical and conforming amendments.
There any
speaking
questions?
To the motion?
Excuse me?
Speaking to the motion. I have a
yes.
question for Office of General Counsel. If a commissioner has a sincere belief that the matter is, that the petition is not properly before the agency pursuant to 11 CFR section 200.2, is the commissioner nonetheless required to vote yes on this motion?
The way the regulation, and this is 200.3A, the way the regulation is crafted, once OGC recommends that it meets the qualifications, the commission has to publish a notice of availability. That doesn't mean that the commission has to publish the exact notice of availability that OGC has drafted. It could have other language. It could contain qualifiers addressing the concern you raised, but the regulation doesn't appear to give any discretion.
But if a commissioner disagrees with the Office of General Counsel's opinion, and the General Counsel has opined here today that some of these legal issues never occurred to them, you're saying that a commissioner is bound by that, even if the commissioner fundamentally disagrees and has solid reason for disagreeing with the conclusion of the Office of General Counsel?
Commissioner, no document is going to get published in the Federal Register until it's approved by the commission. If there are not four votes to approve the notice, it won't be published.
Commissioner Hunter, do you have a question?
Or comment?
No, not right now.
All right. Commissioner Walther.
I would move to postpone any vote or lay it on the table until we have a more definitive view from the council on both of those issues. The issue of the status that was brought up earlier by the commissioners, and also the issue of implications of not voting. I will say, I'll confess, I did vote no once. Within two months after I arrived here. And it was pretty
You were young then, Commissioner Walther.
So right.
A newbie.
And not much smarter, I'll tell you. I did vote against it with Commissioner Lenhardt, and no one told me at the time there was an issue about it. Didn't end up in commissioner jail or, you know.
Other than the jail
whatever.
We're already in.
So I think we need clarity on how this, what the word will means.
Commissioner Hunter.
I didn't hear the last word that Commissioner Walther said. You need clarity on what?
Well, I mean, what the word will means that's being relied upon here to say that it's a non-discretionary. Publication of a notice of ability is therefore non-discretionary. Does that mean if we don't vote for this, what's the implications? It doesn't say it takes four votes. It says the commission. It says the general counsel will. It doesn't say that it has to act on four votes.
Well,
I'm sorry, Commissioner.
Mr. Adav.
Just to clarify, it doesn't say that the general counsel will. It's the commission. Comma, upon the recommendation of the general counsel, will. So it's still the commission that takes the action, not the general counsel's office.
And thank you, Mr. Notte.
What is your recommendation? I mean,
the cover memo indicates that OGC found the petition to qualify.
Commissioner Hunter.
And with all due respect, I don't think that because OGC found the petition qualifies, we therefore have any obligation to vote for it whatsoever. As we've discussed today, I don't believe that it qualifies, and we've extensively discussed that. This is a provision meant for the public, and I'm a little surprised that council isn't moved by any of those arguments, but nevertheless, even if the council still believes it qualifies, I strongly disagree, and I would not be supporting a motion to publish this notice.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Goodman.
I'll add, I read the regulations say if a document qualifies, that the Office of General Counsel doesn't bind the commission in making that determination. The upon recommendation of the Office of General Counsel qualifies what we do later, but if the document must objectively qualify as a petition, and that's not something we delegate to the Office of General Counsel to determine for us. That's still relegated to the judgment of each commissioner and a vote of the commission to determine if it qualifies. It's a predicate to the verb will publish. So I have concluded in my mind that this does not qualify, and therefore I'm not bound to publish.
Okay. Were you making a motion to lay it on the table, or are you? Was that you mentioned it? Are you making a subsidiary motion to the motion?
No, that's my motion. And
it is your motion.
Overridden. I think the issue that was raised earlier for the first time by General Counsel, it's an interesting issue and one that we need to know about going forward.
Right. No, let me ask our Mr. Calvert, could you please talk about the process here?
Yes. Under Commission Directive 10, there are perhaps two motions that are discussed in Directive 10, paragraph E7, that may supersede the main motion in consideration and would seem to be the sort of thing that might apply here, depending on what Commissioner Walther would actually like to do. In 7E, the Commission provides for a motion to lay a matter over, which is closest to, in common parlance, to what would be a motion to table, more like a motion almost to kill, but not quite. Under the procedure for a motion to lay a matter over, any such motion shall require a majority vote of at least three members of the Commission. At least three votes will be required for any subsequent motion to take any such matter from the table. Any such motion shall be undebatable. Any such matter which is laid on the table pursuant to these rules shall be taken from the table pursuant to these rules at the next subsequent meeting, or the matter dies. That's the motion to lay a matter over. Also in order would be a motion to postpone consideration of a matter to a date certain, which also shall require a majority vote of at least three members of the Commission. And just to avoid any confusion, we've interpreted the phrase majority vote of at least three members of the Commission, meaning that if there is a full Commission, that a vote of four would be required, but if there is not a full Commission, then three would be required.
Excuse me, parliamentary inquiry of the... are you saying that the three votes that you mentioned assume that's a majority? You said three votes to take from the table?
Where the rule uses the phrase, any such motion shall require a majority vote of at least three members of the Commission. That is for the motion to lay over or for the motion to postpone to a consideration
but
or a date.
That assumes five commissioners for three to be a majority.
Right.
Okay.
Now, I would point out that a slightly different phrase is used for the subsequent motion to take the matter from the table, and that phrase is merely at least three votes will be required.
Even if it's not a majority?
It does not specify majority in the way the other two clauses do. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Hunter, did you have
I just have a question to my colleague, Commissioner Walther. Did you have, I missed what you said about why you were considering laying it over, because I think we did hear from the Office of General Counsel their opinion. Is there another issue that you wanted to consider?
Well, I don't mind getting outvoted, but I think there's more to be talked about in terms of the status issue for me.
Do you want us to say everything again?
I suggested that I make it a motion to postpone consideration of a matter to a date certain, fine with me.
And
so such motion shall require a majority vote of at least three members of the Commission, which doesn't work in a full Commission.
Okay. So you're making that motion. Is the date certain that you would be willing to do, or is the next month's open meeting? Do you think that's sufficient time?
That's fine with me.
Okay. All right. So there is a motion... a superseding motion on the table to postpone consideration of a matter to a date certain, and the date certain will be the July open meeting.
Madam Chair, parliamentary inquiry. That motion requires how many votes of six in order to prevail?
Four.
Four.
Right. Well, yes.
We'll just take a 2-minute recess. I just want to... I just want to make sure that I understand it. Just talk briefly with my colleagues, if that would be okay.
Yes. Would you like a copy of the directive?
Madam Chair, another parliamentary inquiry. Larry walk us through. So if Commissioner Walther's motion succeeds with four votes,
yes,
this matter will be slated to be on the next open meeting agenda. Pending the request Commissioner Walther asked for further legal guidance.
That's correct.
And then it will be taken up then unless somebody decides as a commission not to bring it up at that time?
That's correct.
Okay. And if Commissioner Walther's motion fails by a vote of less than four votes, then we will proceed back to the original motion made by Commissioner Weintraub here today.
That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a 2-minute recess. It's over, and we are back on agenda. And the last item was a motion by Commissioner Walther to postpone this matter until the next public session in order for him to request legal advice from counsel. So with that being the motion, are there questions, comments? Mr. Vice Chair.
I'll support the motion.
Okay, thank you. So with that, we will vote on that motion. Did you have a comment?
No, I just wanted to say that I will also support the motion. It's my motion that we're delaying, but if my colleague wishes a little extra time to consider it, then I can't recall a time in the history of the agency when we've ever turned anybody down on a request like that, so I will support it.
Okay. Commissioner Hunter.
I'll support it as well, only in deference to my colleague who needs some more time.
All right. So with that, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 All right. That motion passes unanimously. So this item, with respect to the notice, has been postponed until the July meeting. Thank you. Thank you all. Oh, thank you. All right.